We find ourselves entering the third decade of the 21st century, being abruptly thrown into this virtual world for which very few of us were ready. Although many have adapted, let's be honest, we miss seeing friends and loved ones in three-dimensional space with all the communication nuances and physical touch that that dimension brings with it. Yet here we are, and here we shall be for many more months before it's safe to freely exist in the physical world again. But I started thinking about this. Is it really that strange and abrupt? I would argue that humans have been slowly adapting to the virtual world for millennia. Let me share something with you. According to Pen Heaven, yes, there's a blog called Pen Heaven, letters have been playing a crucial part in history for thousands of years. The first ever handwritten letter was thought to have been sent by Persian Queen Atossa around the year 500 BCE. And I would argue that letters were the first human venture into the virtual world. They were for people who desired to connect with each other without being in the same physical space. And you know what? Perhaps the most famous and widely published letters are those of Paul and the early Christian missionaries. Indeed, over 60% of the Christian scriptures that are often referred to as the New Testament are letters. Well, think a minute about how disorienting the first letters were and how much care went into writing them. The writer had to account for having no idea the mood or the circumstance that the reader would be in. In face-to-face conversations, everyone involved has the same context of time and the conditions present for the connection. For example, we can tell if someone looks well or they're not feeling well or they're distracted or whether they're not even really interested in what you have to say. But a letter writer doesn't have the certainty of knowing the time that the letter will be read or the state of mind of the reader at that moment. Well, then additionally, a letter is a permanent conversation, even if it is one-sided, and it can be reread over and over and over again. And each reading is at a different time and under different conditions. This all must have been initially very overwhelming. And great care had to be given to both the writing and the reading of the letters for connections to be formed that were true to their intent. Well, then enter the telephone in the late 19th and early 20th century, and virtual connection changed abruptly again. Now the issue of the time lag with the letters was overcome, but the context was once again missing, as well as the visual reinforcement of intent that you get from a physical conversation, right? Now, to overcome the context, these simple rules of etiquette developed. Now, I remember when I was young, we had these rules that it was impolite to call someone during dinner time or too late. And if you think about it, that rule was there to help us all feel more comfortable that we'd be able to connect with someone that was supposedly in a similar state of mind, i.e. that they were open to getting calls at that time and connecting during that specific time. So somehow it created this neutral zone for us to make phone calls. Well, of course, the participants had to take great care in the words they chose and the tone within which they spoke. Because think about it, they didn't have the luxury now, like letters, of editing their messages. The conversation occurred live. And then it must have been overwhelming to folks who were used to only talking to people, you know, right in the same room or across the fence post, to now rely on hearing a voice and talking without any visual cues. It must have been quite overwhelming. Well, now we find ourselves in the 21st century, in which the science fiction video phones of my childhood have become commonplace. Look at what we're doing right now. We have the immediacy of the telephone, but now with the addition of nonverbal cues. You can see me gesticulating and nodding all over the place, right? We're getting very close to replicating physical three-dimension connection. But it's not a replacement. It's been instead, in fact, that staring at giant heads on a screen for hours on end can be extremely tiring. We've placed so much emphasis now on facial expressions. I find myself, I'm on Zoom calls all day long, and I find myself nodding and doing all this kind of stuff constantly because I want to make sure the person knows I'm paying attention and I'm still awake and that kind of thing. And it's been said that when you have many heads on the screen at the same time, your brain just gets fatigued from trying to process all of that all at the same time. So I guess it boils down to this. Is connecting virtually worth all of this trouble? Well, the popular lecturer, author, and podcast host, Dr. Brené Brown, says this. We are hardwired to connect with others. It's what gives us purpose and meaning in our lives, and without it, there is suffering. And then she goes on to say something that I think is very important. She says, I define connection as the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, when they can give and receive without judgment, and when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. That's a lot to say, a lot of words. I'm going to repeat it. I define connection as the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued. When they can give and receive without judgment, and when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. Well, as a Unitarian Universalist minister, I urge you to view Dr. Brown's thoughts from an ethical, religious, and theological perspective. Isn't it lifting up the inherent worth and dignity of someone when they feel seen, heard, and valued? Isn't giving and receiving without judgment, frankly, the practical implications of our first principle? Treating each other in this manner is not only ethically superior, but we believe it's the way to nurture our faith, to grow into a deeper connection to the sacred. Now for me, the sacred mystery of life doesn't exist out there in the grand cosmos or the universe, but rather in the really small, intimate connections with other human beings. I strive to derive sustenance and strength from relationships, and I often find those connections transcendent. Let me give you three examples. I've been in conversation with a few people in my lifetime in which we were connected at such a deep level, it's as if the whole world around us froze. Time stood still because how we were connecting and what we were connecting about were somehow synchronistic. It felt really transcendent and amazing. Another example. I was volunteering by hanging out with children at a domestic abuse shelter. As you might imagine, these children had usually been through some significant trauma and were typically very edgy, distrustful, and often acted out. Now, one particular boy was having a really rough time one day and was very disruptive to the others who were trying to focus on a craft project. I finally had to physically pick him up and carry him into the hallway to try to settle him down. Well, of course, he didn't like that at all, and he was squirming really aggressively to get free, and I remember him yelling over and over again, "I don't care, I don't care, I don't care." And at one point, I just gently placed my hand on his chest. And while looking him in the eyes, I said, "Well, I care." Bingo. We connected. He immediately became calm and looked deep into my face to see if what I was saying was really true. He must have seen that I really did care about him because his entire body posture changed and his attitude along with it. After a few minutes, we were able to get himself to pull himself together and join the others again, and he was much more cooperative with me in the future. My third example, of course, is singing in a choir. In the choral world, I'm what is known as a blender. It means that no matter whom I sing next to, my voice will unconsciously alter to blend with the others. It's kind of the strangest thing. It's if I'm hardwired to connect through singing in a group. The act of making choral music in my mind is similar to sports teams or any other group creative endeavor. The contributions of the individual are enhanced by the whole when good connections exist. And the result can be unbelievably transformative and transcendent. So these are examples of what I call a theology of connection. And I firmly believe it is an important element of Unitarian Universalist ministry. We are called to try and connect at the deepest level possible with everyone. Isn't that really what it means to be radically welcoming? Isn't that what it means to enable the inherent worth and dignity of everyone? I know, it seems very idealistic and not very realistic. And you're probably thinking, I can do that with people like me. But there's always going to be people with whom I can't or won't connect. And I would say that's not really true. It may be a lot harder to connect, and it may be not as deep as with others. But a theology of connection calls us to find the divine in each other and connect with it. My friends, you will be amazed at how transformative it can be. So what does this ultimately have to do with virtual choirs? For me, a virtual choir is the best image or best metaphor I have for explaining a theology of connection. Virtual choirs are made up of individual singers trying their best to contribute, but they each exist in their own virtual bubble. The technicians perform the magic that turns 17,572 individuals into the beautiful sound and image that we saw. It's a virtual example of the transcendence possible when connection is made. Of course, nothing compares to the real world and singing in a physically real choir. As Eric Whitaker says at the end of the interview, nothing beats singing together and taking that very first breath together. But I also think the words to the song Whitaker gave us, Sing Gently, offers us encouragement to overcome the difficulties of being confined in a virtual world right now. He reminds us that the more connected we are, the stronger we are, and the more resilient we are. He asks us to sing gently, meaning that we find connection with the still, soft voice, and in the private ways, we discover our unique connections with each other. And once those connections are found and demonstrated to others, other people see it, they become inspiration. A line from the poem, may our singing be music for others, and may it keep others aloft. My friends, don't give up on this virtual world and the way we need to connect now. Keep working on connection to others, and in turn deepen your own connection to the transcendent. Namaste. Ashe and Amen.